This is the Ripple Effect with your girl K-Dot, where we're discussing NBA and NFL and everything in between. Going on, guys, your girl K-Dot back in the Ripple Effect. You already know what it is. Great to be back. Shout out to all the supporters. I'm getting so much overwhelming fan mail, and it's such a great feeling to know that people are listening, people are engaged, whether they agree or disagree. It's awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. So shout out to you guys. I'm also gonna be giving away gifts. Just want to let you guys know. Stay engaged. I'm always gonna post a question at the end of the episode. You guys answer it. You know, we'll work out some details with the address and all that, and I'll shoot it right over to you, all right? But, as usual, we have a lot to discuss. And for all my NBA fans, I swear, I did not neglect the NBA. I did it. It's just been a lot of pressing interviews, a lot of pressing topics with the NFL that just can't go without talking about, and 2 hours is not enough time, you know what I mean? But I will tell you this. I'm not sleeping on the NBA. I'm still watching it. I see what Ja Morant's doing. I see what Nurkic is doing consistently. I see what Luka has just begun to do with Tim Hardaway being out of the lineup, as well as, you know, KP. You know, injuries has always plagued him. Knicks fans, you already know. Embiid, I mean, I felt like this is what we've been waiting for Embiid to do for years now. We've asked it of him to do this, putting up like 35 and like 12. Like, I mean, dude is balling out there. And what makes it even more special is the fact that he doesn't need Ben Simmons, you know, to put up those type of numbers. He just needed to be healthy. I think that was the majority of his problem. Not to mention just to know that this is your team. More now than ever. Ben Simmons is a non-issue. The distractions, non-issue. He's put this team exactly where they need to be. I've been watching Miami. They're doing great. Been watching the Suns, although they just had that, 13-game win streak broken the other night. I've been paying attention. I've seen Harden with his struggles still, right? 4 points the other game. Wow, that's struggling. Like, for James Harden, like, that's, I mean, for any star, really, 4 points, that's unfortunate. Because you can see throughout the ups and downs of the Nets. And for the most part, I mean, with KD in the lineup, they were sitting at first, right, for a while, actually. So, I don't know. I don't think he's happy. Some people are saying, you know, but you're going to have Kyrie part-time, which they were wanting for the longest time, right? But now that Kevin Durant's out and he's been pushing himself so much, I mean, if you've been listening, I've been saying this. It's just not sustainable for a guy like that to be playing so many minutes, who is not so far removed from his injury with the Achilles. You know, but that's where coaches matter, right? That's the point of the coach. Players want to play, right? But coaches have to realize that, you know, we got to get players to get out of having their own way, so that way they can get their way. Their way meaning a championship, right? Winning games. Can't win games if you're sitting on the sidelines injured. You know, I mean, it just doesn't add up. So they have to figure that out. I mean, Kyrie kind of set the precedence in the beginning, right? When they first were getting acquired and they kind of were getting all the pieces together with Kevin Durant and then adding James Harden later, well, they don't need a coach, right? They can coach themselves. Well, look at the Nets. Like, this is why you can't coach yourselves. Ridiculous, right? Hopefully they get it together, you know. But I don't know if they're going to get it together in time for James Harden to not want to leave. I feel like, honestly, James Harden's already made up his mind about whether he's going to leave or not. You know, I'm sure he understands the decisions that they were made, and they were made, based off of individual, you know, needs and wants. And maybe James Harden's kind of feeling like, you know what, if that's what we're doing, then what's wrong with me doing the same, you know, and that sort of thing. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how everything plays out. But I mean, speaking of coaching issues, we're going to go to the West. The Lakers, right? Tough shot, Anthony Davis. Tough break. Yeah, looked like it was going in. A little too hard, you know. Man, they're really struggling. A lot of people didn't see that, but not. But let's not get too, you know, caught up with the Lakers. They've been struggling for a while. I mean, shout out to the Clippers, man, for getting it done. Not having Kawhi, not having PG, but not giving up on yourselves. You know, Morris coming up with big shots. You know, I mean, just to keep them in it, you know, and then the nice move. Yeah, and Reggie Jackson with the go-ahead bucket with 4 seconds left. I mean, they played great, you know. Kudos to them. Shout out to them, you know. Lakers are just, I don't know. And then Carmelo Anthony went out, looked like he was, you know, holding his hamstring. I mean, everybody was like, so what, they're old, right? I mean, I don't think anybody was being ageist. I think they were just being practical, right? The NBA is so young right now. Not to mention, I mean, what's being asked of these guys, you know, on a day-to-day basis with these back-to-backs. I mean, if you're in your 30s, you can understand, or you can at least have an appreciation for why age does matter when you're going up against 20-year-olds, you know, on back-to-back nights. You're going to feel it the next day a little different, you know? I mean, and this is at the highest level. I'm not even just talking about at the Y, you know? I mean, you're going to feel it. And it's just not sustainable. I mean, LeBron is having to put up 30, 35 points just to be competitive. That's not even a guaranteed win in some cases, in some games that I'm watching. Just to be competitive, just to be in the conversation. I don't think he saw this in his 19th year in the league, still doing the same things that he was doing at Cleveland, just to stay relevant. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate. It's also unfortunate that everything seems to be blamed on Russell Westbrook, right, and Frank Vogel. You know, I mean, Frank Vogel does deserve actually a lot more of the blame than Russell Westbrook. Mainly because, have we seen anything different from Russell Westbrook from years past? Maybe he was a better shooter. I give you that. You know, defensively, maybe he's been giving up on some plays, but I think the Lakers in general, and if you look at the numbers, I'm sure they'll reflect that. I don't have them handy, but they're just a terrible defensive team in general. You know, so if you're the one guy who, like the high motor guy, who's actually putting in that effort day in and day out, and nobody else seems to be doing that, you're psychologically probably just going to be like, you know, what exactly is the point? Not trying to say that makes it right. It certainly doesn't. It doesn't help his case, especially since with the turnovers and the shooting poorly. Even though when I looked at the numbers, actually, you know, the way Westbrook gets so much media attention, I thought that he was actually leading the league in turnovers. Actually, James Harden is, you know, and John Morant's up there, and there's a few other names. Because point guards, they generally have the ball more, obviously, right? They're the ones who have to make those decisions and rely on the people that they're passing the ball to catch the ball, because if they don't, that's a turnover on them, right? Same thing with the quarterback. You throw the ball probably exactly where you need to throw it, but if your receiver doesn't catch it, right, or if it bounces off of them and the defense catches it, that's an interception on you, right? It looks bad on you. That's a negative stat on your number. But anywho, I just feel like these are all coaching problems. Defense, like, that's effort, right? That when you don't play defense in the NBA or just in basketball in general, I feel like that is a reflection on your coach. Because defense is discipline and hard work, right? It's not, I wouldn't say it's necessarily like, I mean, it is a skill, right? Because you have to be trained. There's certain things you have to know. But I mean, in terms of wanting to do it, it's hard, moving your feet, not your hands, right? I mean, if you've ever done certain drills or seen it done, it's not exactly the most comfortable thing. You know, you're putting your body on the line, right, during charges and things of that nature, blocking. You know, it's the dirty work. You know, it's the things that people necessarily take for granted. That's why, I mean, Draymond is finally really being, like, noticed for these things. But these are things that he's prided himself on since the beginning of his career, you know. But everybody just wants to hear about more of the offense, but they don't understand that the defense is where you set the tone. And if you don't have that, you're done. You know, so, I mean, it's a whole mess. What do I see happening? Let's say they're probably going to be at the play-in tournament. I'll say that. Whether they make it or not, I don't think it'll matter, because at the end of the day, once they get into the first round, if they do, they're gonna exit. You know, they're only gonna. I don't see what they have right now, you know, chemistry-wise, like lasting. You know, it's not just a switch that you could just flip and just say, okay, we're on, we're ready. You can't, not at that age. No way. No way. Guys in and out of the line, like, injuries and things like that are not predictable. You know, but I felt like out of Westbrook, you already knew what you were getting. You were getting him after his prime. You know, but at the same time, I just don't want people to get so crazy. Like, you are talking about a Hall of Fame player here. Like, people just talk about Russell Westbrook like he's nothing nowadays. Has he made a lot of mistakes? Sure. Is Frank Vogel wrong for taking him out of the game? No, he's not. I would have too. But I felt like I don't know what goes on in practice. I don't know what goes on in film. But I don't feel like a lot of these things are not being taught or told, like, or holding guys accountable before the game starts, you know. Because, like Russell Westbrook said, he seemed to be pretty surprised when he was taken out, which I don't feel like he should have been. You should have known that if you make those mistakes, you're going to be taken out of the game. You're going to be treated like everybody else, because at the end of the day, we're trying to win a game here. And if you're, you know, jumping and not playing defense properly, you know, like, causing us unnecessary fouls, and then on the other end, you're turning the ball over, yeah, you're getting pulled. That means, like, you're literally telling me that you can't be trusted in the fourth quarter when the game is on the line. Yeah. You know, so that shouldn't have been a surprise. So I don't know what's happening, but if I were to guess, of course it has something to do with the front office, right? Because everything has to do with money. Westbrook is getting paid like $43 million. That's a lot of money. So I can definitely see why someone in the front office, seeing, because they look at different things. They're not necessarily looking at the game. They're looking at figures, right? They're like, this guy's worth $43 million. Our season ticket holders come to watch this guy play. You know, and we're spending a lot of money for someone who's going to be sitting on the bench in the fourth quarter. I don't know about that. So I don't know, you know what I mean? So I don't know how much, you know, control Frank Vogel had prior to when he decided to, you know, sit Russ, and was kind of like, and then all these news outlets came out with, oh, he's being given permission to bench Russ if this is the case. Honestly, he should be given permission. Like, I mean, that's part of coaching, though. I mean, you should have the permission to coach how you see fit. And that's if a guy's having a bad game, you need to come out. You know, I mean, I get that. That's the gray area, right? Because some guys can sort of push through it, and then you know, good things happen. But when it comes to that effort part, if they're not there, they're not engaged, then yeah, they need to take a seat. They need to take a seat, show me that you can support your teammates, you know, and find another way to help us to get a win, because what you're doing out there on that floor is not, it's not happening, you know. But anyway, there's just so much that goes on into things, and I guess it's so easy to just blame one person, you know. There's so many players that you could blame, especially for the Lakers' downfall, not to mention coaching, maybe even, you know, front office. Nobody ever talks about them, right? It's kind of just the names that you see on the back of the jerseys that usually get the most heat. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I guess people just think, oh, you get paid $43 million, you know, you could take it. But I don't know if that's neither here nor there, but that's just the way life works, right? But on another note, when you think of most improved, I mean, Maxey and the 76ers, when you want to think about Malik Monk, if you want to talk about something positive on the Lakers, Malik Monk has really made a name for himself, and he's another one who also hit a crucial shot to try to get the Lakers back into it, you know, to keep them engaged. A lot of the positives that you see what's going on with the Lakers are the unsung heroes, you know, the sort of the people you don't think about. But Malik Monk, I see you. You know, you're doing big things. It's just unfortunate, you know, you're getting caught up in everything else that's going on, but at least you're staying focused and still doing what you got to do and still improving your game. And that's all anybody can ever ask you to do. So that's awesome. Around the league, you can see even Miles Bridges. John Morant definitely doesn't deserve most improved. I think he's beyond that, you know, before everybody starts killing me. Like, what do you mean he's most? I think he's in MVP conversation. He's definitely up there with Embiid, you know, Nurkic, but also, I also heard Embiid is actually moved up. Like, everybody thinks he's number one, but I don't know. It's hard. It's hard, man. You got the Joker doing his thing. I mean, steady, no matter who's in the lineup, no matter what's going on, you know, because Michael Porter Jr.'s been out. Same thing with Murray. I mean, he's been steady. He's been consistent. He's still been the playmaker that Denver has needed. He's provided everything that they've needed. You need scoring, I got you. You need rebounding, got you. Playmaking, I mean, he's just checking all the boxes and fulfilling whatever need and not necessarily making excuses, which is also appreciated and noted. Embiid, we've already talked about him. Steph, a lot of people are saying that he's going through like a slump. Like, the lazy analysis, guys, it bothers. It bothers severely. Steph Curry was not going through a slump, guys. Was he missing some shots that he normally would make? Yes. I don't think anybody would, you know, we all have eyes. We can see what's going on. But do you not also see the defensive coverages that have been, that coaches have been putting on Steph? It's like to a playoff intensity. Like, it's been crazy. Steph is getting played differently. Rightfully so. When you're the GOAT, you know, shooting wise, I mean, I don't blame them. But at the same time, to just kind of just say, oh, Steph's just shooting bad lately, ever since, you know, he passed, you know, Ray Allen and Reggie Miller, he's just been off, terrible. No, that's not it at all. It's because defenses are playing him differently, and now he needs to make adjustments. That's all it is. And he's been making those necessary adjustments no matter who's been in his ear. Because I don't know what they were thinking over there in Houston talking, you know, trash to Steph, even though he was saying that he didn't. But, you know, we were watching. We clearly saw you talking trash. And Steph just, like, went off for, like, 20-plus points. You know, Steph doesn't, you know, he's not new to this. Steph has seen it all, heard it all. And here's the thing about great players. Like, I mean, I get it when you're not as great as, like, a Steph or you're not, like, in that all-star category. You have to find, like, different antics, like, different things to get under guys like, you know, Stephen Curry. You have to find something, right, to kind of get them off their game. Guys do it all the time. They were infamous for this back in the 90s, you know, when I first started watching basketball. But nowadays, you know, they talk, but not really. Not really. It's more lovey-dovey. But I'm talking about, like, really, like, you know, saying things to really get under guys' skin. Like, Kevin Garnett was one of those guys that would do stuff like that. You know, Gary Payton, you know, Larry Bird back in the day, like, before my time, obviously. But, you know, I watch ESPN Classic, so I know what's up. You know, but so I get it. Like, you got to find something to get under their skin. But guys like Steph is just special. You know, I mean, his muscle memory is incredible. Let's put it that way, because that's pretty much what it is. And in order to have muscle memory, I mean, to elite-ness like Steph, I mean, that just shows you repetition, right? That's just practice. Unbelievable the way he's able to, you know, overcome no matter what. You know, Lance Stephenson, right? He used to blow in LeBron's ear. Like, you always try to find these, like, little things to, you know, get at players. I mean, whether it works or not, you figured, hey, I tried. You know, I mean, the guy's just good. What do you want from me? But the NBA is looking good. All-Star game. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I used to love the All-Star game. Look forward to it. You know, the dunk contest this year, maybe I'll tune in. You know, I'll probably watch it just so I can, you know, be involved, you know, to know what's going on. But really, it's kind of like, I'm sorry, guys. I mean, there's nothing wrong with fans. There isn't. But I just think that at some point we have to take them out of the voting process. I said it. We have to. And don't get me, I'm a fan too. Like, you know, but I feel like there's levels to this, you know, fanatics. I'm more of the fan of, like, obsessed. Like, I want to know what's going on. I want to hear the story. You know, I want to know why this is, why this guy's like that. What did he have to overcome to get to where he's at? I'm more obsessed like that. I want to read all the stories. I want to find out everything and then talk about it to nauseam. That's me. Some fans, casual fans, you know, who don't really know much about the game, who maybe don't study defenses, don't study offenses, or don't really know what's going on or the intricacies that go on in the front office, you know, in the contracts and the drafting and, you know, all those little things, you know, that you really, it's studying. Like, that's what it is. Like, it's not just like, oh, you hear a report. Like, that's just the easy answer. Like, that's what I put out there for you guys because it's entertaining. People don't want to hear about the boring stuff. Trust me, like, unless you're that type of person like me, like, you're just obsessed and you just want to know and you just want to have as much information as available to you as possible so that way you can formulate your own opinion. That's just me. That's what I do. But the casual fan is kind of like, nah, I just want to hear, like, the basics, you know, I'll see a highlight or two and then have, like, this whole elaborate opinion about something. And it's like, it's cool to have an opinion, but it's like, man, you're, it's okay to have, like, some basis to it too. Like, where is this coming from, you know, like. I don't know, but, you know, but some people just don't get it. Like, they don't see it that way, you know, and that's okay, I guess, but it's just very hard to have a conversation like that when you don't really have all the facts that's to you like that. And then you have your other fans, right, who are just blindly loyal. When I mean blindly, I mean, like, this is my team. I'm not even going to accept, like, what's wrong with them, why they're like this. I just like them, and I'm going to disagree with everybody and anyone who says anything against them, even if there's some fact or merit to it. Like, that's the type of fan that I'm referring to. Because where can you go with that? Like, I get it. Like, that's your team. That's cool. You know, but what can we do with that? Like, where can we go with that? You know, if your team's the Lakers and you want them to do well, you have to be able to see where their deficiencies are. I like the Knicks. Everybody knows that. Anybody who knows me since I've been a kid, I love the Knicks. But we're terrible right now. I'm not gonna sit up here and say we're the greatest ever, the Mecca. I mean, the Mecca used to mean something. It doesn't hold as much value. Let's just be honest. You know, that's just, it is what it is. They're hard to watch at this point. Who knows what's going to happen, like, if we even make the playoffs. You know, it is kind of like when your team makes the playoffs and looks like that they can get past the first round, but obviously it was way too much pressure put on them. You know, Randall wasn't exactly the answer, wasn't trusting his teammates and whatever. We just said, you know what? We got a lot of effort this season because we haven't seen nothing like that in a while. So we were willing to kind of just say, okay, we weren't terrible, you know. We probably should have beat the Hawks, but, you know, it's okay. Trae Young is a rising superstar, as you can see. You know, it is what it is. You know, he's just going to be another one of those problems in the East that we got to worry about, not just the Greek Freak, not just Embiid, you know, not just Tatum, but it is Jaylen Brown. Like, this other real cats that we have to worry about. Jimmy Butler. I mean, it is what it is. But when you see the acquisitions that we made with Kemba, Evan Fournier, and you kind of see this regression, right? Now, I expected some, maybe in the beginning of the season, chemistry issues, you know, guys need to learn how to gel, you know, whatever, what have you. But just the games that we're losing, you know, not being able to score, you know, just having like these scoring droughts for in the worst moments. I mean, it's always bad when you have a scoring drought, right? Especially when your defense is not where it should be, especially with Tim's at the helm. That's a little annoying. It's kind of what he's known for. But it's always like in the fourth, you know, when you really need stops. It's like guys just, they don't have it. You know, even if we do get a stop, we're not able to score. But on the other end, it looks like it's pretty easy for the other team to score. Like, things like that, you know? I mean, so if you're a Knicks fan, I understand. Like, there's times where, well, I'm sure there was years where you've had times where you needed to step away from the game and then come back. And they say, I can't, you know, it's just for mental health reasons. You know, if you're a Knicks fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But if you've been in there, you know, day and grinding, watching every game, wearing all your Knicks stuff, you know, I hope that you're speaking to somebody, because it's rough. It's rough to be in there, you know, all in year after year. But yeah, so that's what I mean. But I'll also speak to some Knicks fans that are just completely delusional and don't understand what's going on. You know, and like I said, it's hard to have a conversation. I mean, that's worth anything, that either one of us will get anything out of. It's hard, you know, because people are just very, you know, set in their ways. And it's like, that's cool, too. You know, it's fun having the conversation. Anytime I'm talking sports, it kind of doesn't matter to me. But yeah, so like, I say all that, guys, to say this. I didn't forget about the NBA. I'm still watching. I promise. I'm still watching. I'm going to have some episodes coming out that would be just NBA, because guess what? The NFL is almost done. It's almost done. And this is where the season is really going to just, it should take on a whole another life of its own. That's what we're all hoping for, right? Because I'm sure a lot of teams that were kind of hoping that was going to exceed expectations, Lakers, Nets, right? And now, which y'all wanted to see in the finals, not happening. Like, I would just take that off, like, just let it go out your mind, you know, because I just don't see that happening. I mean, a lot of things would have to happen in order for that to happen, and if it does, I mean, great, more to talk about. I was wrong, right? But still, more to talk about. I focus on what's the bigger picture. But anyway, all we could do is just wait and see, what necessary adjustments. Trade deadlines is not here yet. There's a lot of things going on with that. The Nets, oh wow, breaking news, everybody. The Nets just said that they're open to trading James Harden. Wow. I'm going to say that again. The Brooklyn Nets are now open to trading James Harden. I told you he was not happy. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean the trade is going to go through, because there's a lot of logistics involved. And I'm going to make sure I stay on here as long enough. Don't worry. I mean, it's not live, but this is at 5 o'clock, though. So, all right. And they're thinking about trading with Philly in particular, with the whole Ben Simmons situation. Because as you know, with the whole Ben Simmons situation, he does not plan on playing for Philly ever again. Now, sure, Ben Simmons has his problems, you know, not shooting, you know, light work. But y'all didn't make it any better in Philly to make him want to stay. You know, so it is what it is. I mean, but a lot of people say that Ben Simmons has attitude, he's arrogant. Whatever the case may be, the problem is, like, it just sounded like you guys wanted him to go. He agreed. He was like, you know what, maybe it is time for me to go. And then, you know, you have Dan Majerle playing these games, like, it's just, it's difficult, because nobody wants to be seen as being weak, but at the same time, are you really holding your franchise hostage by trying to have this battle with one player when you got Embiid trying to be the MVP of the league right now, sending a message letting you know that I don't care what's going on. I'm trying to win. We're trying to win a championship. Do you know how he will be marveled and just elevated on this platform that can't be taken down? I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a statue right next to Rocky. You know, with Embiid, if he were to win a championship in Philly, are you kidding me? And people already love Embiid. I mean, he's that guy that will be out there in the streets balling, you know, playing with guys, you know. I mean, I told y'all from before, I understand that some people are not going to like this trade. Some people are not going to say it's worth it. Even when they were talking about Beal and for Harden, people didn't like it for obvious reasons, right? I mean, Beal's the all-around guy, right? I mean, I don't want to trade someone who doesn't shoot, someone who does shoot. You know, I mean, especially at his level. But at some point, you have to figure out what's better for the team. And I know it's even harder because these are all East teams. So if I'm Brooklyn, I'm like, really? Am I really trying to make, you know, this team better or this team? You know, but at the end of the day, you can't really think about everybody else. You got to think about it at home. Like, how can I make my locker room happy? You know, I know a lot of coaches, a lot of upper management don't care and don't want to know what makes the guys around there happy, but I feel like that does matter at this point, at this stage in the game, right? Y'all didn't do enough to protect Ben Simmons. You know, you guys pretty much just let him out there to kind of just be roasted pretty much by his own fans and city. I don't really know what you expect out of that after all that happens. But I'll keep you guys updated. So far, they're just saying that they're open to it, and we'll get back to it. Because there's too much going on in the NFL, guys. There's too much going on in the NFL. Way, way too much. There's the Pro Bowl, but, you know, who watches that? We already talked about Tom Brady retiring. And for you out there who thought I was just putting out things and saying, oh, he's not retiring, I told you. No, I knew he was, because when certain NFL insiders say something, and then when they refuse to take it down, I'm not going to take it down. They obviously know a lot more than I do and privy to a lot more information that I have. Then, you know, I'm just going to err on the side of them and let them figure it out. And then I'm just going to read everything I can. And everything was just pointing in the right direction. I just think Brady obviously wanted to retire how he wanted to retire, not how everybody else wanted him to retire. You know, he wanted to do things on his terms. 22 years, fair enough. But bottom line is, he is retired. You know, he's done unspeakable, like, great things for the league, not to mention for people who don't necessarily look the part, but make people respect you. I mean, nobody respected him. He made people respect him. I mean, a leader. Some people say leaders are born. Some people say leaders are made. It's just a testament to your will. Are some leaders born? Sure. Some people are just born natural leaders. And it's impressive to watch. But what's even more impressive is when you were not necessarily born to do this, but your will and your determination made you that way. That's like, whew. That's another level. That's another level of respect. I don't think there's any more discussion. 7 rings, 2 different teams, 1 removed from the other. I mean, championship. I mean, he did it without Belichick. I think he checked all the boxes, you know, besides beating the Giants in the Super Bowl. I mean, other than those boxes, you know, it solidified a lot of things for him. And congrats to him. But when I said there's a lot of things to discuss in the NFL, that wasn't necessarily it. Because there's way more I got to, you know, speak on Tom Brady. And I think that's going to have to be its own episode in its own right. Just because of how much he brought to the game. How much he brought to, I mean, all sports, really. Just like how Kobe Bryant transcended, you know, to all these different, I mean, even from corporate jobs, right? To everyday 9-to-5 jobs to football, basketball, tennis. I mean, he touched a lot of people, golf, whatever. You know, with his mama mentality, you know. Brady did too. You know, with his work ethic, with how do you speak to people, forming those relationships, right? Brady was big on that. It was the relationships. If you ask him why he's so successful, you know, that's probably going to be one of the things that one of the reasons that he will tell you is because of those relationships that he forms. And I relate to that so much, like not obviously on a Brady level, but on the level of everything that I do, I always want to try to form those relationships, you know, because not only is it things that you can learn and you can add to your, you know, repertoire of like how you want to be as a, whether as a person or as a, you know, a parent in the future, or, you know, just in general, like whatever you're trying to do, relationships is the key. It is. It's a different perspective. You know, people can share their experiences, not to mention understanding people's needs, understanding where people are coming from, and not being like judgmental, you know, kind of meeting people where they're at and bringing them forward, bringing out the best in people. That's a leader. Like, that's like, it's just a true testament to what he's been doing. But I promise that's not why I said that. I know I got off on a tangent there. I do that sometimes. But this podcast originally started, I know it's like 36 minutes later, but because of the Brian Flores situation, we know that he used to be the head coach of the Dolphins. We know he turned that franchise into a respectable franchise in the NFL. At some point, we were talking about them like they belong in college. I mean, we were talking about the Dolphins, like, how are they even in the league? There's only 31 teams now because the Dolphins are just so bad. Stephen Ross needed to do something. You have to find somebody. Try to change your culture. Do anything. They got Tua. Okay, he had his problems. He had his injuries. All right, he was having also injuries before he was even drafted, so you kind of knew already, you know, what you were kind of getting, especially in a new quarterback, you know, with these high expectations of a losing franchise now that you have to turn around pretty much by yourself, right? But Brian Flores, you know, he was an assistant coach with the Patriots under Bill Belichick, right? Arguably the greatest coach. Pretty much agreed upon that he is the greatest coach in the NFL. You know, he studied under him. You know, he watched him. His professionalism, you know, I think is what guys love the most. And I mean Brian Flores. His integrity, getting up with guys, you know, at like 5 a.m, making sure they get their workouts in. And these are things that I've all heard. Like, I watch other podcasts. I read a lot of different news or different interviews. And guys, and when I mean guys, I mean these athletes, like these players in the NFL, really respect him. Like, the way they speak of him is so, they speak so highly of him. Even coaches, Marvin Lewis, they speaks very highly of him. You know, Hugh Jackson, people obviously have their opinion about him, you know, when he was with the Browns and everything else that transpired, because he's claiming that things happened very similarly with him. You know, and you already know about the Browns losing season. We don't even need to get into that. But this guy was respected. Went to Boston College, you know, built his way up. Wasn't an easy road, but he built it with hard work and determination. And like all of us are taught, as long as you work hard, you're determined, you do everything that's needed in order to get what you're looking for, that job, that, you know, that relationship, whatever it is. You do, like, he did that. You know, he checked all those boxes. He worked all the way up. You know, and then to hear, having interviews with the Giants, you know. And that's what makes it tough. I am a fan of the Giants. I am from New York, so it kind of makes sense, right? So that is a little, it's disheartening, honestly. Because it definitely makes you question why you are a fan. right? I'm sure we all struggle with that, you know, whether you're into music, sports, or whatever it is, you know, to try to separate the celebrity or the athlete from the actual person, you know, character wise, you know, and trying to see where you fit in and how that affects you. And let me tell you, like, some of these athletes / celebrities, whatever the case may be, make it really hard for you to stay fans of them or, you know, these organizations. That's what I'll say. But so far, we have not heard all of the evidence, so I don't want to jump to any conclusions, nor have I completely made up my mind one way or the other. All I know is it just sounds like a lot of messed up stuff is happening, and then everybody starts lying. That's just what it sounds like. I'm just being real. That's what it sounds like. It can easily be not. Like, and we need to figure that out, and that's why, you know, blind. But I don't believe a guy with all this integrity all of a sudden just starts making up accusations, you know, and then, which also accuses Stephen Ross of offering him $100,000 per game to lose. I'm gonna tell you how messed up this is. I'm gonna break it down for you really quickly. I'm lying. I'm not capable of doing breaking this down quickly, but I'm gonna tell you this is how messed up this is. Let's start with the players. You're a player, right? You're in the NFL. You're fighting. You're going through injuries. You're staying up late at night trying to learn the playbook, right? Depending on what side of the ball you're on, you're going to be up later than others, obviously. But the point is, you're working out. You have a whole regimen. You know, your contract is not guaranteed, bro. Like, it's not. It's based off incentives. You have a signing bonus, sure. Nothing close to where your contract incentives are. Like, those millions that you see flashing around your screen, those are all incentives. That just means if you do this, you get that. If you score X amount of touchdowns, you get that. If you have a certain amount of sacks, you will get that. It also says, if I'm not wrong, but for most players, it matters if you win. There is an incentive if you win. Think about that. That's in your contract. You get paid a certain amount of money, whether it's $1 million, whether it's $100,000, depending on who you are on the roster, of your importance, or if you're a skilled player or non-skilled player, if you're on the line, whatever. You have an incentive to win. It's in your contract to win based off how your income, like how you're going to live. It depends on winning. Kind of makes sense, right? That's why we play. We play to win. Cool. Stay with me here. Players don't know this, though, because why would they tell you that? You'd be pretty upset. Anywho, coach, brand new coach. Let's say it doesn't work out with this team for whatever reason. It could be like a Jim Harbaugh situation. You're winning, but yet you still get fired. Right? We could take it to the NBA when Toronto fired their coach. Coach of the year, fired. You need to take your talent somewhere else. What do you think they're looking at? You know, when the GM is looking for coaches to hire, what do you think they're looking at? I'll tell you, don't hurt yourself. It's their record. They're looking at your record. Don't get me wrong. We can get into other things later, because I know some people are going to say, how do you look at your record if you've never been a head coach before? And they always choose the one that, you know, never had a job before. But we'll get to that a little bit later. And that's mainly because they're choosing people who they're comfortable with because they look like them. But that's a whole nother story. Stay with me. A lot of times they are choosing you based off your record, especially if they're looking at a coach where it didn't work out on another team. They are looking at your record. They're probably even going to ask around to see how you were, How you were treating guys? How are you developing players? You know, what adjustments did you make on third down? They're going to be asking all these different things. Like, how do you choose your coaching staff appropriately? What is the culture that you bring over here? Or can what you do here mix with our culture? You know, things like that. Stay with me. But you have Stephen Ross telling you to tank games for $100K per game. Now, that may sound enticing, but if I'm losing, are you guaranteeing me a job for the rest of my career? Because if I'm sitting up here just losing, what am I going to do after this season in case you decide to drop me anyway? Because you find another coach that you may have wanted anyway. And maybe you only hired me because you were planning on tanking anyway. So I don't need a quote-unquote real coach right now. I just need draft picks, and then I can go shop for the coach I want. Do you not see that, like, how messed up that is? And then couple that with the only black coach that we see in the NFL has never had a losing season. Please let that sink in. The only black coach that's in the NFL now, currently, has never had a losing season. Now, for my people in the back, what do you think that's saying? Easy. That is saying that if you're going to be a person of color, you better be good. And I mean real, I mean ridiculously, extraordinarily good. And this is what? 13 year, maybe what more since the Rooney Rule? The Rooney Rule being that you're required as an organization to at least give a person of color an interview. And Ron Rivera being the only Spanish coach as well. Like, you have to think about, you have to understand, and in the league, meaning made up of its players, is 70%, a little over 70%. I don't understand how people don't see the issue here. How is Brian Flores going to be able to get a job? And just to go back, I mean, I know it's a lot, guys, but just to go back to the Giants, as you know, we already hired DeBall to be the coach. But Belichick was he thought he was congratulating Brian DeBall, but he actually was texting Brian Flores, congratulations. And meanwhile, Brian Flores is like, whoa, what are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about? Like, how are you already texting me this? I didn't even have the interview yet. So it's like you guys already made up your mind and you're just going through the motions with me after everything that I've been through, like putting the groundwork, like, and you're treating me like I have zero experience. Like, I'm not a proven coach. Maybe not a proven, you know, winning coach yet, but I think you need opportunities in order to prove that. And I don't know if a lot of this, I can't see a guy just wanting to bring all this attention to himself just because, like, someone who just goes from just being so ethical, you know, and having this integrity about him and not, you know, just showcasing it, just being who he is. And people, when they comment on his character, this is what they say. You'll be hard pressed to find anybody who say that Brian Flores is unethical, besides the people that he's bringing these charges to, I guess, because they're really going crazy with trying to say, yo, he didn't do any of this. This is unsubstantiated. And I really hope that he has more proof besides that text message from Bill Belichick, because if not, I mean, it's just going to be he said, she said. You know, and you also have plausible deniability, which a lot of people take advantage of because nobody wants to tell the truth. Nobody wants to be held accountable for this. Mm-mm. Cancer culture is too real out there. Mm-mm. They don't want none of that. But I mean, but if you're wrong and this is what you really did, and in the Broncos setting up a sham interview, you know, with allegations, right? I mean, this is all alleged. We don't know for sure. This is what we've heard from Brian Flores' team and from even Brian Flores himself, because he was on a couple of interviews that I had watched. And you can just see, like, he wants to say a lot of other things, but he's just maintaining his professionalism, which I applaud, because I can't imagine if all these things are true and you was truly treated this way after all your hard work and your sacrifice and your dedication to the league, to the Shield, that this is the way you would be treated. Like, this is based off of the color of your skin, allegedly. I mean, you know, to be hung over in an interview, I mean, that's not a type of, that's not an easy job to get. It's just a shame. Because all you can do is just shake your head at this point. And did you know that the Giants never had a black head coach? Or coach in general? I did not know that. Like, I'm ashamed to say, like, as a Giants fan, I did not know that. I don't think I realized that. And when you let certain things like that sink in and it just doesn't look right. And I'm sorry, that Rooney Rule was 20-year history. Not 13, excuse me. 20 years. I got a good team. Thank you. So, but moving on. Also, within that history of 129 vacancies, meaning organizations who need head coaches, only 17 of them were people of color. I know some people are counting on their hands trying to figure out, like, has it been like 17? Yeah. And I think at one time we had like 7 black head coaches, and then there was like this mass like firing, and it was justified for some, right? If you're, you know, have a losing culture, and you know, but why wasn't some of those guys picked up at a head coaching position and not just given a DC position or OC position? You know, why weren't they given other opportunities? And in this class action lawsuit, Brian Flores brought a lot of great points and some very, very good quotes, some very insightful quotes by the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King. And this is Black History Month, so here we go. Morals cannot be legislated, but behavior can be regulated. The law cannot make an employer love me, but it can keep him from refusing to hire me because of the color of my skin. Like, wow. Like, that's powerful. And this is what I wanted. This is what I was alluding to before, when it's natural. Like, the little bit, my little takeaway so far from being in school, understanding psychology, and still got a ways to go, but it's a fun journey, I must say, because it does help you to understand, you know, your own bias or the biases that are out there, whether people want to realize them or not. We do look for things that are comfortable, right? Things that are usually comfortable, or things that are usually like us, look like us, think like us, maybe have the same value system, you know. But the problem is, when we start to believe those things without really trying to find out about the person just based the way they look, that's when we start to run into issues, right? So a lot of these hirings where coaches don't have any experience, I can't even say coaches, where guys just don't have any experience and they get hired as head coaches, it does give you pause. Because there are a lot of guys out there who do have the experience, who've been waiting patiently, who have gone through all the, you know, checked all the boxes, and are not given that opportunity. And other guys, it just seems to be, oh, I happen to know so-and-so. You know, or I like what he said type of thing. You know, and it just makes you wonder. You know, it does make you think. And at the same time, it does leave your head scratching if you're really following the sport and you're trying to understand why you would make a move like that versus the move that kind of made sense in the first place. And then when you see how it's played out, it's kind of like, I told you, but I don't understand what your thinking was. You know, because at the end of the day, you're just trying to win. And I think everybody understands that. Like, if you're trying to win, I don't think you're going to get too much of an argument out of a lot of people. He also says some pretty powerful things. Sit tight. I know it's been long, but sit. These are critical things, all right? This is important. If you listen, watch the NFL, and understand it, these are things that we need to know about. You know, we need to learn about. We need to move past. So he says this is inside of his class action lawsuit, which is pretty big. It's highest. In certain critical ways, the NFL is racially segregated and has managed, much like a plantation, its 32 owners, none of whom are black, profit substantially from the labor of the NFL players, 70% of whom are black. The owners watch the games atop NFL stadiums in their luxury boxes, while their minority black workforce puts their bodies on the line every Sunday, taking vicious hits and suffering debilitating injuries to their bodies, their brains, while the NFL and its owners reap billions of dollars. End quote. Obviously, this has been a lot. I do want you guys to think this over. I also want to hear from you, whether it's through Facebook, whether it's through my Instagram. I want to hear your opinion, or even if it's online, or if it's on Spotify. I'm going to pose certain questions. Like, one of the biggest questions I want to pose to you guys is, do you believe that this could be real? Or do you believe that this can't be real? Are you tired? Either way of the conversation. Like, are you tired? Are you tired of hearing about it? Or are you tired that it's going on and you feel like there's no end to it? Keep in mind that this is ongoing. This is just the start of it. If you're on the side of you're tired, did you agree with Kaepernick? Did you think that he had a point? Or were you on the side of, I don't know if I agree with Colin Kaepernick. I was trying to just keep it as sports. But now when more of these keep coming up, these situations, are you one of those people who changed your mind about Colin Kaepernick? I really want to hear from you guys. That would be really interesting. But either way, no matter your opinion, I do want to hear from you. Once I put the questions up, if I see that you've answered, I'm going to be in touch with you because I want to start giving away gifts. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, no matter your opinion, you'll still get the gift. I'm just looking for the engagement. So as long as you're engaging, it's cool. I know this has been pretty heavy. It's been a long podcast that I haven't had in a while. But you know what? It's been a pleasure, and it's something that we got to discuss. You know, sports is sports. But at the end of the day, you know, we're all human. Right is right. Wrong is wrong. Let's not politicize what's right and what's wrong. But I got to go. I'll see y'all. Peace.
This is the Ripple Effect with your girl, KDOT, where we're discussing NBA and NFL and everything in between.